I'm Cray Beaumont Flynn. Welcome to Beyond the Design, a show that gives you a peek behind the curtain of the design industry and shares the stories of those that are the driving force behind it. Well, welcome to Beyond the Design, and today we have William Hefner with us. Welcome to the show, William.
Thank you, Craig. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and start off and ask you, can you share with us the story of how you became interested in architecture and design, and what or who were your early influencers?
Okay. So I became interested in architecture, design, and really building too at an early age. I grew up in the suburbs of Sacramento, and my parents had a childhood friend, college friend, who was an architect. And they, as our family grew and I was the oldest, we did a couple of additions onto the house, maybe three by the time I was a teenager. And I remember him coming with his rolled up kind of yellow tracing paper, and he'd sit at the kitchen table. And I was so curious, even from, I think the first time, like 4 years old, I just sat there and just was mesmerized. I still remember it in detail. And he would have these drawings of what they would do. And that first project in the summer, the carpenters came and they built this addition on the house, in the days when you could build an addition on a house in the summer. And I wanted to, my mother said, I insisted on being out there every day with my tool belt, walking around and eating lunch with the guys. And it was just like, I loved it. And it happened a couple more times where it came when I was 10 and another time 13. And by the time I was 10, I would be sort of drawing my own plans in my room instead of doing homework usually. And I would be building things, or I'd have like a little electrical project I was trying to do, but it was just sort of making things and dreaming about houses. And that was always part of my inner dialogue or whatever, right?
Right.
That's what was happening for me. So I never really thought about what to do. And I went to college. So this architect was an important influence, and he sort of directed me to go take a path to study liberal arts undergraduate and architecture as a graduate degree. Because he said that way you'll be more well-rounded. And so I did, like, I studied art history and English literature, things that I wasn't, that I knew wouldn't be careers for me, but it would be sort of a background. And then I went to grad school. So that was kind of my path towards onward towards architecture.
Very similar to mine. I used to play with building blocks and, erector sets and things like that. And it's like, kind of was already in my DNA, I guess, very similar to yours. With such a rich family history in California, how has your heritage influenced your approach to architecture and design?
I think that, so the landscape of California, and that sort of indoor outdoor living aspect to it. Like, we lived in Sacramento. My father's family was from sort of north of there, but it was an area that looks very much like Napa Valley, or that was sort of rolling, brown hills in the summer and oak trees and, views and a certain climate. And so many of my childhood memories about being outside. And, I've always had this interest in landscape as well as architecture, and that being part of the environment. So I think that so much of my design focus when I'm doing it has to do with the outside portion of houses, or that kind of layer, that interface between in and out. This is kind of, I would say that's where I keep coming back to my work.
Right. So you started Studio William Hefner in 89. What were some of the challenges you faced in the early days, and how did you overcome them?
Well, it's interesting, because I worked for the first 8 years out of school. I worked for Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, designing high-rise buildings. And I was really good at it, but I sort of realized that I didn't love it the way I loved houses. There's something about, it was a rainy night and I was coming home from work early and had a chance to grab some food. There's a big magazine stand in LA on Robertson Boulevard near my house. And I would stop and stock up on magazines. And I never bought Architectural Record. I was buying, you know, all these like French shelter mags and things. And I just realized one day, you know, you're good at what you're doing, but it's not your first love. So
right.
I left, but what I didn't know was I left sort of in the middle of a recession. Because, you know, as a kid, as sheltered, I didn't realize there was a recession, and you don't register that as long as you're still being paid at your job, right?
Because right.
I was working so hard. So I started the business in the middle of a recession. I was fortunate because I had a number of projects I'd been working on that were kind of like moonlight jobs from SOM. And I had a couple of people working for me out of my apartment, which is part of why I decided to leave. I realized it wasn't a hobby. It was really a business at some point.
It's a real job.
Yeah, it was a real job. So I left, but I found it challenging. But it was one of the best things for me because it made me really good at managing things. I had to manage it pretty tightly because there wasn't very much work. I think that's the time when interest rates were like 17% or something crazy, you know. And but I sort of got by being creative, and I think I survived by being versatile, like stylistically, you know. Was it because of my art history background, I was able to do traditional projects in a very authentic kind of good way. I had the modern training, and then I did landscape architecture, and we were doing decorating. So I sort of had enough things I could do to survive.
Right. So you've written three books about California architecture. What inspired you to do those books? And what inspired you to become an author? And how do you think about books contribute to the broader conversation about design and architecture?
Yeah, I think that the first book I started kind of in the middle of another recession, so that 2008, by about 2010, I had some work, but I wasn't doing as much as I normally do. And I thought to just not go crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a friend who represented a publisher, and they approached me about doing a book. I thought this would be a great project to have. Well, I'm kind of like feeling like things are a little lean. And so it gave me something to do. And I guess the reason I wanted to do it is really show the versatility, the sort of range of our work that a lot of people didn't know. But and as we started working on it, we realized it was really all these homes were kind of California homes in their way. And it's that, like I was saying before, the connection to landscape, the connection to light and air, and sort of the way that there's a simplicity about them that it's not fussy in a sort of straightforward California way, if that makes sense. You know, there's that sort of pioneer thing about it. So as a theme, then it all sort of clicked and fell into place. In writing about it, it just seemed like, and also when you're doing work that kind of, for me, the practice of putting the book together and the images and the drawings, it has been important for me to always have drawings in the book as well, like as an architecture book. It's sort of a great way to just put a period at the end of a sentence. Like you work for years on these projects. And sometimes, you know, the construction finishes, you walk away and you don't go back, but there's sort of like to work hard at the photography of them and to intentionally put together a description and photos that describe it's a great way to sort of memorialize it.
True.
And this sense of closure for me, I like that.
So how was the process for you in actually collecting the images and the projects you wanted to incorporate into those three books? And is there a fourth book coming along?
I've started thinking about a fourth book. It takes me a while. It takes like a year and a half or 2 years for me to do them because I fuss over them.
Right.
And, you know, I work with the photographers, and we shoot the projects. I usually babysit the shoots the whole time, and they're like running around the job site with my iPhone saying, "What about this shot? What about this shot?" But I love the process. But I do think, yes, there is a fourth book I'm thinking about that's really more focused on modern work. where the others have been more like a range of work that way. So kind of luxurious modern things, which I think fascinates me a bit, like luxurious without being, you know, gaudy or that
kind or over of the top.
I think that's and I want to historically, because I'm always have sort of a historical vision about projects, but there are a handful, just a handful of projects in LA that were some modern and luxurious, because a lot of the modern things were case study houses and, you know, very Spartan, and that's the kind of the architecture we appreciate about them. And then they're that sort of range of kind of straight, I'll call conquistador or modern or something, where they're just sort of out there over the top modern. But in between that, there was this kind of middle ground of luxurious modern houses, like some of the things that Billy Haynes worked on, or, you know, and that I've come to appreciate, and that I tried to emulate, not necessarily stylistically, but as an ideal, right? To have a modern house feel luxurious in a way, in terms of the quality materials and the proportions and the elegance of the systems that control it, and the doors and windows. And it's been a fun part of my work lately.
Well, talking about various architectural styles, your work spans both traditional and modernist architecture. How do you navigate the interplay between these styles in your projects?
So I like the, it's a couple of things about it. Creatively, I really love the idea that I'm sort of doing something different all the time. I have friends who have practices, and I feel like their journey has been to continually perfect a stylistic thing that they do. And it's kind of amazing what they can do with it. For me, creatively, I like trying something different all the time. I like trying I don't want to repeat myself, and I enjoy that. And I think because the first 7 or 8 years out of school, I did high-rise buildings. When I came to sort of residential practice, there's a lot of that kind of influence in the work, and it tended to make the traditional projects sort of more edited and more simple and more intentional. And I like the fact, and I think in our office, the fact that we do both. I think the modern projects tend to get an influence of some more complexity in layers and some more interest in materials and details, maybe than sort of a strictly modern point of view, and where the modern point of view influences the traditional projects in their own ways. So I think that cross-contamination, or whatever, if you will, like lends sort of a richer vocabulary within the office of what we do.
So when you take on a new project, what is your design process from conception to completion?
I start by just doing lots of sketches. You know, I love sketching. I remember years ago, Michael Graves taught a class at UCLA when I was there for a quarter or something. And one of his sort of sayings was, drawing is tangible speculation, you know, and it was really one of those things that struck me. It's, yes, you can talk about all these things that might be great to do, but, you know, drawing is really tangible speculation. And so I'll go through, you know, a dozen schemes kind of early on something before I pick three or four that I like and try to develop. But I love that process and of trying to imagine the universe of the house and to sort of test and see how the design layouts of the design on the land, you know, change how the house will live. Right. And, so I tend to spend a lot of time on layouts and adjacencies and all this stuff that's to some people not so sexy. You know, I feel like at this point in my career, I can do a beautiful house, but I want to do the right beautiful house for you. I want to do the right house for you. So my design process involves a lot that kind of thing. And then we do build physical models still of projects. And I found it to be important. You know, we'll have three people that'll stay up all night doing these kind of whiz bang, you know, renderings, 3D renderings and that. I have like a little model on the table in the conference room, and they'll look at the drawings quickly, and then they'll spend the whole meeting looking at the little model because somehow it's like it's possible to put yourself there in those models.
True. All right.
But for me, you know, while we're building it, sort of having that test of, you know, seeing it masked out and go, I don't know, you know, that looked fine in a sketch, but what if we cut this back, we do this, this overhang's too short or too long, or that I find that I make a lot of adjustments that way. Mm-hmm. So that's some of my process still.
I love that.
It's a good part of it.
Well, and then I think it's more of a tangible, realistic element, you know, sometimes renderings, I mean, they're beautiful and they're very lively, but they're still very one-dimensional. And the artistry that goes into a model makes it almost a breathing entity in itself.
It does. I think the drawings for people, it's a little bit like watching TV. You know, it's like, oh, is this really my house? It's harder to, like you say, I agree that they're kind of one-dimensional. It's harder to feel the 3D with them, even though they're 3D. Mm-hmm. Right. So,
how do you incorporate sustainable practices into your projects? And are there any challenges you face in doing so?
So I felt, you know, that we had a lot of challenges in this aspect of our practice for years. Like mm-hmm. we were doing these houses that were millions of dollars, cost millions of dollars. And it would be hard to get people interested in any sustainable feature to them, you know, because I think they felt, I can afford the electrical bill, or I can afford this thing. You know, it's not a big deal. But I think in the last like 5 years, or people would ask you about the payback, you know, what's my payback on the panels? And that's 30 years to get it. So, right. But more and more people are interested in it really from a feel good point of view, right? Like I'm making a difference here because I'm doing a house that is going to be 80% off the grid. I'm going to use sustainable materials. But there's really been a shift. And I think maybe some triggered by the reality of global warming, more and more people mm-hmm. accepting it. And then a lot of it's driven by sort of the part of our client base that's in the sort of 30s, 40s in terms of age, right? That they are very interested in it. If they're driving all electric cars, they're doing these things, or they've got, you know, three kids and they're thinking about the future. And so there's definitely more traction with that group about right. these kind of features, and indoor air quality is important to them. Sustainability, efficiency, mm-hmm. it's all that. It's good.
Sometimes the clients don't think about those components. They just want a pretty house.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Right.
Of the various mini projects you've completed, is there one that stands out particularly meaningful or challenging? And tell us the story behind it.
They all have their challenges. but yeah, which one didn't? But I guess at the moment, you know, because I don't know, my memory is short, you know, like an artistic person, the thing that I'm working on at the moment seems like the most important to me, right? You said leave things behind. But we have a project in St. Martin, the French side of St. Martin, that's on eight acres of the coast there. That's a series of buildings. It's a compound for a family. And so it includes like a staff building, a guest house with four big suites in it, mm-hmm. and kind of common area, a separate house for parties, a hangar for helicopters and a helicopter pad, a great kind of garage structure for special cars, a main house residence, and a sort of beach building that's down on the beach. It has half of it is beach frontage, and the other are these sort of cliffs, but it's like all right along this promontory in the ocean that faces west.
Amazing.
And the people we've done work for them before, but they're the woman's favorite colors like pink, aqua, and lavender and silver. And so the house we did for them in Beverly Hills is very kind of exuberant and different. It's a kind of all those things. And creatively, they'll let us do kind of anything. So it's a lot of pressure that way, because mm-hmm. I feel like I feel the most pressure when somebody says, just, you know, you do your thing, right? So, so we're doing that, but then we're trying to build it. The other part, like we drew this fantastic series of buildings and houses, and it's like 25,000 square feet, all the buildings together, but they've started to build it. And then we're discovering that we designed kind of this first world house for a third world country because the construction quality there is difficult. They don't right. have the subcontractors or the access to materials or that. Plus they have this crazy severe weather in the hurricane we had in 2017, they had 200-mile-an-hour winds they clocked. So you have to design the building to these like above Cat 5 hurricane standards and have it be beautiful and have it be thin. And, you know, I want it to be thin and light and sparkly. And so it's been such a great learning to do it. Right. And it's helped us develop all kinds of details, and creatively it's going to be fantastic. But it's that sort of shepherding it all the way through the process part that's the challenge. And it took about a year and a half, but we've kind of got now the right team and the right pieces, and like we figured out how to be successful there. So that's been satisfying for me.
Right.
So yeah, so I'm very, very excited about it.
And when's the completion of this project?
Let's see. I would say about 2.5 years we'll be finished with it.
Okay. Like
we've got, you know, 50% of the building square footage started, and it's exciting. The other part is to learning about all the landscape even there. Like that's been right. great.
Your practice includes architecture, obviously, but also multiple design principles. How do you correlate and integrate these disciplines within the particularly be successful on a project?
So when I designed, like even so from early on, I always I always saw kind of the whole thing. Like I saw the landscape. I knew where I wanted height or color or hardscape mm-hmm. or what I wanted to have up against the building to make it look right. And then furniture, I guess the interior architecture, I thought distinguished projects. You see so many projects that where I felt like the interiors of the house were not as strong as the exterior. And so we spend more time on the interior architecture, sometimes the exterior, just because that's the living environment. And I think that's what conveys the sense of the house. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought that finishing that job included furnishing it as well. So probably half of the projects we do in the office, we do the furniture and we do the whole thing. And it's kind of like, I feel like it's one vision. That's how I see it. And it sort of comes out all we sort of march out all the way through. And in some of those disciplines, I admit on like the landscape side, I'm a dilettante that way. I haven't formally studied it. I've done my best to learn a lot and I know what I like, but I now have a really strong team on the landscape that keeps me out of trouble. Like a tree is going to die there or, you know, whatever it is, right? That kind of thing. And then I kind of have the same on the decorating side too. Like we've got a great team to help on that. So.
Do they pull you in? Do they rein you in sometimes? Like, great idea, William, but...
Yes, definitely. Definitely. You know, like, and it's helpful. Like I need that. It's no trouble, but, and it's become, collaborative, like a number, unfortunately, cause I've got a number of people in the office been with me like 15 or 20 years, you know, working on things. So we have great rapport and, you know, it's really a collaborative, creative environment. I really appreciate it. So.
That's good. You've been recognized for your work with numerous publications and awards. How do you feel these accolades impact your work in your firm?
It's interesting. I mean, this helped to get the word out about it. Yeah. That's in the most simple way, right? I think it's created a sense of pride within the office that people have worked on those projects, people contributed to have them recognized. Because when you do, you know, the custom residences like this, especially so many places, they're behind a gate. You know, people would never take their parents to go see it or drive by. Or, you know, it's like, right. This stuff I did when I worked at SWM, like I drive by them in LA now and think, that was cool. Or, you know, people know, oh, you worked on that building, right? But they're kind of secrets in a way. So I like that aspect of it. I think people that we've worked with in the past like seeing it too, because I often get emails from people saying, wow, I saw your piece in Architectural Digest, or I saw this, and you know, they kind of feel like my architect, you know, as his house published there, here or there. So and it's fun for me personally, because when I started this, you know, it frankly wasn't very ambitious. I just thought if I did a house or two a year and could maybe help build it, that would be fine for me. But you know, this summer we were in Europe and in Munich in the airport, and I grabbed a German Architectural Digest, and I looked in like our pages. I mean, our project was a big feature in there. I thought, wow, this is kind of nice. Well, this is good. At least we're doing something that has some it translates in some way sort of out of the region, right? It's this whole California notion, right? That like that people kind of can understand like somewhere else besides where we practice. And
does it take you to a place of like self-reflection? It's like, wow, here I'm in a different country and there's my name.
It does. Like I was really, and like I said, I think that part of it was, I thought, well, there's something about this that these, you know, some German editor thought was relatable to people in Germany or whatever. I think, wow, that's interesting. You're doing something that has appeal, a broader appeal, right? I thought that's good because it makes it fun. It also helped because some of the publications really help us, you know, get work further afield. Like we've got like a project in Dubai at the moment, Kuwait, Copenhagen, and then sort of the East Coast and the St. Martin's thing. And we've worked in Korea recently. So, and it's for me creatively, it's been so challenging, but also stimulating to design for different environments and different sites and different cultures, right? To see how all that would translate. So it just kind of makes what we do that much more interesting.
So being based in California, how has the architecture and design industry in California kind of morphed and evolved since you started your career? And since you do projects globally, do you see that there's a correlation between that? Or is California very unique?
I think that, you know, the design, sort of, it's a design industry, architecture and interior design culture in Los Angeles has really grown a lot in the last like 20 years. It's like the quality of the designers, you know, I'm fortunate to have the number of friends and colleagues who have, you know, really great businesses and have developed very sophisticated work. You know, I think California architecture, aside from sort of a narrow band of it, was not quite that way. And I think that it's interesting because the Dubai people wanted to hire us because they said, you know, we rent a house every once in a while. We spend some time in the summers in Southern California. We decided we want to an architect from California, because all the architecture we saw was so great there. You know? And I think that people realize there's something about what people are doing in California that is different than than the architecture in other places. I think so much of that is responding to climate and environment that makes the architecture look like it works here. You know,
So what inspires and motivates you?
I think creativity. I want to feel like I'm creative. And one thing I discovered with the pandemic, with COVID, mm-hmm. was that I ended up changing my work habits because I needed to, right? Like we all kind of got quarantined in our houses.
Right.
And, you know, I found, like, I used to think that in order for my business to be successful, I need to be sitting down at my desk like 50 hours a week, you know, in the office, right? And then, starting to work remotely and communicating with all the people in the office and that, I suddenly sort of felt like I was back in school again. Like I was sort of printing my own drawings and putting together scotch tape, and I had the scissors out and I was drawing, scribbling, and, you know, taking pictures of them, putting them up on the wall. And I wasn't getting interrupted like I did sitting in the office all the time. I really felt like I was in school again. It was this sort of burst of creative energy. And, you know, I think at times when I used to feel like I sort of fought through 6 or 7 hours of my day to just get done administrative and answer questions, and I had to have like an hour to draw, and it would be like, you know, different. I felt like I sort of flipped my day by what happened with COVID. And I feel like the work suddenly felt better to me. You know, maybe it was better, but and I felt more hands-on with it. And so this is kind of a long answer to your question, but it's so, and I've tried to hang on to a lot of aspects of that. It was a big learning for me to give myself enough creative time. And that's what I really live for. And mm-hmm. when you have your own business and it gets to be more complex, it's easy to get distracted by some aspect of that. But we've sort of reorganized things a bit. So those kind of management functions, I don't do so much, and I concentrate on the creative part.
Right.
I just want to feel, and I started feeling like more like an artist, and it was, I thought, wow, this is good. I'm not going to lose this.
All right.
So, yeah. So anyway, it's been good, but that's what I get up for is to, like today we've got a house that we're working on in Connecticut. I'm going to try to, spend like 5 or 6 hours like scribbling and cutting and using whiteout, and just, it's sometimes messy, but yeah, that kind of process kept my hands dirty. Right. That's what I like.
Right. That's part of the fun part.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Speaking of the pandemic, it changed a lot how people think about their living spaces. Have you noticed a shift in client demands or priorities since then?
So yeah, we've seen a big change. I think in sort of a priorities wise, like we've seen people are willing to invest more in their house than they were before. It used to be sort of a certain budget. People mm-hmm. were willing to spend a certain amount. I would say people were willing to spend sort of 50% of X, whatever X was before, they might have thought, because they're thinking, if we're going to be stuck here, like we might get stuck here again. I don't want to have things that aren't great, right? I want only great. And so what people are willing to invest in terms of materials, details, infrastructure, furniture, the rest of it, it makes sense. The other thing is that people kind of want to have everything in their house. They want to have, I'd say, the interest in kind of like a spa environment, and sort of like health-wise too, because I think people are thinking more about health with all this. You know, we see like infrared saunas and cold plunges and steam rooms mm-hmm. and massage areas and meditation rooms and, you know, more significant gyms that are really pleasant, not just thinking about sticking a gym down the basement, but, you know, having it be someplace that it's an important priority in their life. We're seeing that. And also on the entertainment side, people are thinking, yes, I don't, if we're going to be here and we're going to have people over, we want to have, like, we want to have a game room. We want to have a theater, and we want to have a party kind of room, like a speakeasy mm-hmm. kind of thing. And so it's kind of a different, it's had people think differently about entertaining and being in their house, right? What that might look like. Rather than just we're going to have a living room and dining room and we're going to have people over. It's like, it's a different thing. And if it's just us in the house, we're going to have a blast in this area. So it's changed a lot, I think.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular project that you haven't worked on yet that you would like to?
Well, so like I said, my young career, I was designing like high-rise buildings. And I'm kind of like itching to try like another, like a taller building. You know, I'd say we have a couple mixed-use building projects, a few that we've done recently for people that are probably 5 or 6 stories. But we're looking to get involved in something that's taller, like maybe 15 or 20. But I've been sort of nostalgic for that because that was sort of a fun part of my life. And I think, well, I could see us expanding that way. And we're trying to get involved in a hotel at the moment because hotel project, to me, it would be fun. I'm a hotel junkie. I love hotels. And it's been a big part of my postgraduate education just to go, you know, just go to new hotels and see them and spend time in them and do all that, like all over the world. I always learn a lot from that. So those are my kind of maybe 2 things, hotels and something higher rise.
Living and working in Southern California, Los Angeles and Santa Barbara offers a diverse experiences and inspirations. How do you see, and how do these environmental influences your creative process?
So part of the reason I originally decided to go to grad school in LA was I had a press professor when I was going to school up in Oregon at the time, undergrad. And we were talking about, because I'd been accepted to several architecture schools, where to go. And he made this comment. He said, you know, I see, and because I think LA could be a good place for you because it's kind of like a modern day Mecca. And it did. It just sort of struck a chord with me. And then I went down to check out the school and do that. And I feel like there really is this strong kind of multicultural influence in Los Angeles that I sort of appreciate from day one. And there are all these sort of segments of history, this isolated bit of history, even architecturally, these like sort of small movements, like Frank Lloyd Wright came and did some of those block houses, and you had the sort of Neutra Schindler things, and then you had case study, and then you had, and this whole other undercurrent of the Spanish colonial work in different parts of the city, which was really special in the 20s and 30s. And all these different things, the way that they influence the culture. And then in our office, for whatever reason, we have a very international group. You know, we have the people from Europe, born and raised and educated in Europe, South America, Central America, Russia. It's kind of its own melting pot, and that group of influences is so good. It just makes the office interesting, but it also like informs the work in a way. Like people approach things. We've been educated different places, and it's like not. I think it's good. I think there's 5 or 6 languages that from India to 5 or 6 languages that you'll hear people. Speaking in the office and that. So I'm proud of that part because I think it gives us a special advantage in a way. So,
what advice would you give to someone that was interested in becoming an architect or designer and to inspire them into this career, especially being as impactful as yours?
I guess a couple of things that I learned early on was, like I had the good fortune to trail Andrea Putman around Los Angeles one time. She came out for an AIA awards kind of jury thing. And I was sort of young and I drove her everywhere. We were driving around with my windows down with her smoking her Gitans in the car, and she was rattling on about things she thought. But one of the things she told me was, for your own work, she said, hire the best photographer you can afford. She said, whatever you do, she said, even if it puts you in the poorhouse a bit, but it's totally worth doing. And you know, I really thought about that. And the first couple of projects that I finished, I didn't. I saved some money on photography. And and then I sort of realized it's important to do that. It's kind of that also putting the period after the, you know, sentence, kind of finishing things correctly. And then the other thing is just that every project you have to work on trying to make it new and great.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think that I tell people in the office, you know, this is Hollywood. You're only as good as your last movie. And we have to really work on making things good. I mean, and we have to, I think that's such an important thing. Like, that's really the only marketing that I've ever done, is just try to do good work. And, you know, and then treat people really well. So there's no reason to get in a fight with the contractor, you know, or the people on the job site or our vendors. You know, we want to treat everybody with respect. And I just believe it all comes back to you. Because you get in this business, you can get some prima donnas who don't do that. And
true.
When I was at SOM, I certainly saw people that didn't do that. So it just was, it was important to me to just be in the universe in a way that is right. So,
besides the project in St. Martin, the forthcoming book at some point, are there any other upcoming projects or things going on that you're particularly excited about?
Yes, we have set three mountain projects that for us have been great. It's been an opportunity to do things that are more rustic. So we have a house in Aspen and two in Jackson Hole that are in construction. And I'm very excited about those because it's sort of a different palette of materials. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a rougher aesthetic. And I sometimes feel that our work that's in town, more or less, like or in more urban settings, gets to be very refined, and it's great, but, you know, like I said, I like variety. So it's been a really fun learning curve to sort of research materials and details and figure out kind of where to land with those aesthetically. So mm-hmm. they sort of reflect a mountain setting, but they don't look like Disneyland, right? So, so I'm very excited about them, but the different ways of making spaces there and how to make them. And also on the decorating side, how to make them feel right when the climate changes so much between summer and winter, and what do you do to them to have them feel that they would resonate with the people who live there at those times of year as well. So that's a particular fun part of what we're doing right now.
Looking forward, what legacy do you hope to leave in the world of architecture and design?
Well, that's a big question. I don't know. You know, I think it's hard to have perspective on your own work. You know, I think that's one of the hardest things for me. You're so close to it. And, you know, even when you finish a project that's great, you still know that 20 things about it that you would never do again, you know, or something like that. Because I'm so critical. But, I don't know. Like, I would love to leave a legacy that, you know, just about a certain, I mean, I think my philosophy of making houses, right? That how they seem, how they live in the city, how they live in the landscape, mm-hmm. what they're like to live in, and that if it would be, that'd be great if people thought that they were, if they thought they were special in some way, unique, I guess, because we try to make them very special.
So being a creative, have you ever designed your own home?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Were you your best client, or were you your own worst client?
Oh, worst by far. Worst by far. I've done like four or five things for myself over the years. We did a vacation home up here in Montecito, and it's not a big house, but it took like 5 years to build because there were just times I would get busy with client projects, and they'd say, oh, the electrician needs you to walk everything before you can keep going. I said, I can't get up there for 2 weeks, I've got this deadline or whatever. It was an hour and a half away from where I couldn't get up. And but then change things. And it's like that particular project had a lot of trees on the site, and I designed a house and spent 14 months to get it approved. And they went there and took out all the trees that weren't oaks. And suddenly I realized that there was a great view from the property, which I didn't know about before. And so I threw away the plans and started over because I felt like the parts of the house weren't in the right places to take advantage of the views. But that's the kind of bad client that I am. Or they put something in and we tear it out because it just wasn't quite as good as I thought it would be.
Right.
But then when it's done, like, I love that house. And it was messy to get there, but so much of it is right. You know, I'm not willing to compromise when it's for myself. So, but anyway, so worst client.
Worst client. Will you work with yourself again?
Like, wear out the people in the office. I have to sort of like move it around to a different project manager to help me because they are burned by the end of the project. It's like, I can't do that again. So.
So what's next for William Hefner?
I think that just the next part for me is just enjoy how I kind of reorganize my creative life within the office and to see where it takes us. And, you know, we have such wonderful opportunities at the moment on our plate, and I'm excited about doing those. I'm excited about the sort of broader appeal of our work and the situations that that might get us into. And, you know, I'm also finding that by kind of changing the way I do things, I'm enjoying the people more, both, like, we have such interesting clients and so much of doing houses is really personal. And so, you know, it's a whole thing's given me perspective on trying to enjoy the process more. And, it's been good that way. I think that's our next focus. Enjoy the people, enjoy the journey. You know, like, we worked really hard, you know, we've been working really hard to kind of get where we are and think about enjoying it.
If there's one thing you'd want to do besides what you're doing as a career and profession, what would that be?
Oh, so my, my other passion is photography. Like, I love photography. And, like, when I was a kid, like, you know, it's at high school, like, I'd steal my mother's Vogue magazine and just be looking at all the photos. And it was the days when, you know, they're all this great photographs, like photographers like Irving Penn and Helmut Newton and all these guys, Richard Avedon, would photograph for them. And I really, like, when I was in college, I specifically saved money to fly to New York to see Richard Avedon's, like, first show of sort of big prints at the his Marlboro Gallery or something. But it was that's like my other thing. So I don't know, maybe I would become a photographer. I love that part, and commercial photography in some way.
Yeah,
you know, with the sort of sideline as art, but I love that kind of idea.
Well, William, I enjoyed our conversation and appreciate you coming on the show today. Is there anything else you want to add and tell our audience?
Oh, what? I would say, I know, I would just say for people that, I said, spend the time on your environment, your home environment. You know, I think that every time I've seen somebody spend some energy on it or, you know, do things that really make you feel comfortable, it sort of grounds you and sets you up in a way that is different. You sort of enjoy life more. So I just think whatever you can do about your home environment, do it now. Don't postpone it. I think it'll be good for you.
So, absolutely. Yeah.
But anyway, again, thank you. I appreciate being part of it.
Absolutely. It's been fun, and much continued success to you and your crew, and we will chat soon.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you.